Listening, Unit 1, page 8, B.
You will hear three different extracts. For questions 1 to 6, choose the answer A, B or C which fits best according to what you hear. There are two questions for each extract. You will hear the extracts twice. Extract 1. You will hear a woman discussing workplace bullying.
Studies show that employees who engage in workplace bullying do so to other employees that they perceive as being bad at their jobs. This kind of vigilante justice gives the bully justification for belittling colleagues and spreading vicious rumours about them. What's worse is that this type of employee has significant power in the office, meaning that if you fail to work up the courage to stand up to them, you'll most likely be the victim of a repeat offence. The ultimate goal of these rogue employees is often to drive workers away so that they'll be the member of staff whose supervisors call on when they need an experienced hand. Especially prevalent in the US, few companies intervene in workplace bullying, which allows this dysfunctional behaviour to thrive. According to one poll, 49% of respondents admitted their company has no proactive process to deal with bullying. Of those who have one, astonishingly few employees utilised it, 7%, and only 6% said the bullying behaviour ceased. But it's hugely beneficial for companies to put a stop to bullying. Victims lose on average around 7 hours of work a week as a result of being rendered incapable of doing their jobs due to bullying.
Now listen again.
Studies show that employees who engage in workplace bullying do so to other employees that they perceive as being bad at their jobs. This kind of vigilante justice gives the bully justification for belittling colleagues and spreading vicious rumours about them. What's worse is that this type of employee has significant power in the office, meaning that if you fail to work up the courage to stand up to them, you'll most likely be the victim of a repeat offence. The ultimate goal of these rogue employees is often to drive workers away so that they'll be the member of staff whose supervisors call on when they need an experienced hand. Especially prevalent in the US, few companies intervene in workplace bullying, which allows this dysfunctional behaviour to thrive. According to one poll, 49% of respondents admitted their company has no proactive process to deal with bullying. Of those who have one, astonishingly few employees utilised it, 7%, and only 6% said the bullying behaviour ceased. But it's hugely beneficial for companies to put a stop to bullying. Victims lose on average around 7 hours of work a week as a result of being rendered incapable of doing their jobs due to bullying.
Extract 2. You will hear a sociologist being interviewed about why people give.
Can you give our listeners an idea of what your study has revealed about significant factors that influence people to give?
Interestingly enough, donors seem to be more responsive when the recipient is an individual rather than when they hear impersonal statistics that give information about the scale of a problem. They know, of course, that it's best to donate in a way that will have the greatest impact, but nevertheless, if they can connect their donation to an individual beneficiary, it tends to overrule what their minds might be telling them. Even advertising that communicates the effectiveness of a charity doesn't sway donors. In fact, the opposite is true, because it gives the impression that there are enough donors as it is, and charities lose donations as a result.
What direction, in your opinion, should charities take in terms of netting bigger and better donations?
Well, naturally, a charity's specific cause is going to make a difference, so there will be a limit to how much they will give depending on how supportive they are of the cause. But one detail of our study reveals that people tend to give more generously when they actually know the person who's asking for a donation. Therefore, charities should cultivate their existing relationships as much as possible. And perhaps they need to rethink their campaigns entirely. Match funding campaigns that feature well-known persons, for example, have much better results than when the public is asked to match the donations of a complete stranger.
Now listen again.
Can you give our listeners an idea of what your study has revealed about significant factors that influence people to give?
Interestingly enough, donors seem to be more responsive when the recipient is an individual rather than when they hear impersonal statistics that give information about the scale of a problem. They know, of course, that it's best to donate in a way that will have the greatest impact, but nevertheless, if they can connect their donation to an individual beneficiary, it tends to overrule what their minds might be telling them. Even advertising that communicates the effectiveness of a charity doesn't sway donors. In fact, the opposite is true, because it gives the impression that there are enough donors as it is, and charities lose donations as a result.
What direction, in your opinion, should charities take in terms of netting bigger and better donations?
Well, naturally, a charity's specific cause is going to make a difference, so there will be a limit to how much they will give depending on how supportive they are of the cause. But one detail of our study reveals that people tend to give more generously when they actually know the person who's asking for a donation. Therefore, charities should cultivate their existing relationships as much as possible. And perhaps they need to rethink their campaigns entirely. Match funding campaigns that feature well-known persons, for example, have much better results than when the public is asked to match the donations of a complete stranger.
Extract 3. You will hear a man describing how jealousy plays a role in self-esteem.
Identifying low self-esteem in individuals isn't always so clear-cut. In some cases, it manifests as aggressive, jealous behaviour that stems from feeling vulnerable about one's relationships with others. As most studies of inadequate self-esteem centre on factors such as family life, drug addiction, or genetic predisposition, researchers in a recent study chose to explore how jealousy factors into a person's self-worth. In a study of grade 9 students in the US, jealousy seemed to play a substantial role in the lives of students whose inclination is towards loneliness, acceptance issues, and different forms of aggression, whether they be physical or emotional. Differences in genders were noted, with higher rates of jealousy apparent in girls who, while far more loyal and committed to their friends than their male counterparts, also expected more from their friendships. Particularly distressing is the fact that those, regardless of gender, whose relationships were tinged with jealousy often didn't enjoy their friendships very much because they poured all their energy into protecting them.
Now listen again.
Identifying low self-esteem in individuals isn't always so clear-cut. In some cases, it manifests as aggressive, jealous behaviour that stems from feeling vulnerable about one's relationships with others. As most studies of inadequate self-esteem centre on factors such as family life, drug addiction, or genetic predisposition, researchers in a recent study chose to explore how jealousy factors into a person's self-worth. In a study of grade 9 students in the US, jealousy seemed to play a substantial role in the lives of students whose inclination is towards loneliness, acceptance issues, and different forms of aggression, whether they be physical or emotional. Differences in genders were noted, with higher rates of jealousy apparent in girls who, while far more loyal and committed to their friends than their male counterparts, also expected more from their friendships. Particularly distressing is the fact that those, regardless of gender, whose relationships were tinged with jealousy often didn't enjoy their friendships very much because they poured all their energy into protecting them.